You know, that music reminds me of paddling along in a canoe or a kayak, mostly a kayak, I guess, for me, on some waters, and the waves, that little doot-doot-doot, sounds to me like it's time to talk about water.
It's always time to talk about water.
Kayaking. Oh, man, we have a couple of guests for you here. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Darren Bush, owner and chief paddling evangelist for Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison, one of them. Darren, good to have you back.
Always great to be here.
And Timothy Bauer. Tim's the author of the 2016 guidebook, Canoeing and Kayaking South Central Wisconsin, 60 Paddling Adventures Within 60 Miles of Madison, and a forthcoming guidebook. Right, Tim?
Yep, in another year or so.
Tim, and welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and privilege, Larry.
As we talk with our guests, I hope you'll join in. Are you ready to dip a paddle into your favorite lake or stream? Tell us about it by giving us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Tim, we'll start with you. You recently wrote an article in Silent Sports magazine about paddling, and you made the case for paddling in the fall.
Yeah, I think it's one of the prettier times of the year, of course, because of the foliage. That's one of the main draws. But there are subtler indexes that come along with fall paddling, such as there are fewer bugs that are not as quite annoying. It's not as hot, humid. You don't come home smelling like pina colada, you know, suntan lotion. There's just a...
Is that what you use?
It's what's in the car.
Oh, got it.
You know, I don't know. There's just a... There's more of a soulfulness, I think, to the autumn feeling. There's also a mindfulness about that the season's going to change soon. And it's an opportunity to eat, drink, and be merry while we still can before the darkness comes, it gets too cold, the hunting comes, all that. So October is kind of like my Mardi Gras for paddling.
Yeah. Darren, how about you?
Well, I spent a week ago Monday, on the Grant River, which is perfect right now. The color is, when I was there, it was like half fall, half green, which I actually prefer. I like it when it's kind of a mix. Now it's all in full blaze. But yeah, I call it the baby Kickapoo. It's a great little river. But yeah, I totally agree. This is the best time as far as I'm concerned to go. And I did a little trip, an overnighter on the Wisconsin 2 weekends ago with my son and a couple of friends. And we were the only ones on the river because it's quote unquote too cold. No, it's not. Just dress for the weather, dress for immersion, and you're fine.
And Tim, back to you for a minute. You mentioned paddling in central Wisconsin, and so often the Driftless or northern Wisconsin get all the paddling glory. Why is central Wisconsin a great place to go right now in the fall?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me it's twofold. One, I've always tried to be... always have an underdog in the fight. And so that which is hiding in the middle is often, like you said, the most neglected or overlooked. So there's that pull just for the underdog. Another reason, and I have to thank Barry at Miles Paddled for pointing me on to this. He's from central Wisconsin originally. And his go-to for fall has always been returning back to, you know, Waupaca, Portage counties, in particular Wood County, Marathon, that center part of the state. There are just so many wonderful rivers, from the Plover to the Waupaca, the Crystal. There's a section of the Eau Claire, not the Eau Claire by the city, a different Eau Claire, one of many Eau Claires throughout Wisconsin.
That's just clear water.
And it's clear water, so most of those streams have either a sandy or sand gravel bottom. So even though they're surrounded by agriculture, like a lot of the state is, The water clarity doesn't suffer from so much of the soil erosion. So you just have clear, clean running water, fantastic boulders courtesy of the glacier, and just a great mix of conifers, but a lot of deciduous trees that tend to just shine magnanimously this time of year.
Yeah. Same for you?
Yeah. I mean, the plover's a go-to that no one ever goes to, but it's true. You think about up north, right? Everybody drives right past all that stuff in the middle to get up to, you know, Oneida County and Vilas County. And don't blame them because it's beautiful up there. But you drive right over the middle, the Wisconsin, which is stunning. And you drive right over a bunch of small streams and, like, you know, the Crystal, the Tomorrow, the Wapakoneta, and all those are fantastic.
Darren, last month you shared some news about your store, Rutabaga Paddle Sports.
Yes, I did.
Well, tell us the background. There's people that may probably who are listening who, what? What's going on?
So what happened is, so I'm 63. I had a heart attack a couple of years ago, and I'm trying to wind things up a little bit. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to close Rutabaga and, you know, leave on my own terms and just go do my thing. My next thing is I've been volunteering as a hospice chaplain, and I'm turning that into my retirement job. So I'm going back to school, essentially, for that training. And soon after I announced that, I received hundreds of emails, hundreds of direct messages. I'm not sure how they got my phone number, but they did. What are you doing? How can you do this? You can't do this. I'm so glad you're doing that thing next, but how about Rutabaga? What's going to happen? And people approaching me and saying, can we make this work? And then I had a couple of people approach me, and one was a business broker who was an old customer, and he flew here from North Carolina to convince me to sell it. And I decided if I can choose the new person, if I can choose the person that's going to run it the way that I do it and have the same ethos and sense of community, I would consider it. And there's some people that are sniffing at it right now. The ones that I know of, I trust. So I decided to backtrack and say, okay, I won't close it. I'll find a new owner for it. And then everything blew up again, just 200 emails and thank you. But it's like, you know, people said, I can't imagine, you know, paddling world without Rutabaga in it. And I said, well, I guess I can't either. So let's just move forward and keep this thing going for another 50 years.
Mm-hmm. And thereafter, a collective blew through South Central Wisconsin and radiated throughout the upper Midwest states.
So you're kind of, you were in the process of kind of closing down, but Rutabaga is not going to...
No, it's not going anywhere.
You're probably, there needs to be probably some change in,
You know, there'll be change in ownership, but like I said, the people that I'm vetting everybody. If it's a couple of private equity bros that want to play thing, nope, sorry, you're not going to keep it going the way that I want it to go. I'm not concerned about that because the kind of people that are interested in this are interested because of the community that Rutabaga has created, and they want to carry that on. And I feel like George Bailey at the end of It's a Wonderful Life, you know? It's like, no man who's poor who has friends, right, Clarence?
Yeah.
So I've just been overwhelmed by the kindness and love shown to me and to Rutabaga, and I'm looking forward to continuing it. I will stick around on a part-time basis to help with the transition and make sure that everything goes smoothly. Kinacopia is going to run as it always does, and I'm working on that right now.
So you're going to, there's no, Kinacopia is not going away.
It wasn't going to go away anyway, but now it's definitely not going away. And the other events we do will keep going as well. We run a thing called Camp Rutabaga up at Boulder Junction in September. We're going to do that again because it was very successful as an event, moderately successful to a break even as a business venture. But if all that matters in money, then why are we doing this, right?
Yeah. What have you learned from running this store for as many years as, I mean, it's been a long time you and I have been on the show together here.
Yeah, I had hair the first time I was on here. What have I learned? that relationships are more important than anything else, and that if you're chasing money, you'll never catch it. If you just try and be authentic and, you know, love people and treat them like, you know, I always say in chaplaincy, you see them, you hear them, and you love them. It's the same thing with customers. You see them, you hear them, and you love them. So really, the world isn't that different from what I do at work, from what I do in my volunteer, soon-to-be profession.
Yeah. Tim, what does a store like Rutabaga add to the paddling community?
Oh, it's kind of the beating heartbeat, not just commercially, but in terms of community itself. There is an opportunity to ask questions, to learn, to figure out what you really want versus what, you know, maybe you think you want because you've read about it somewhere or you saw something online. But Rutabaga and the wonderful staff there can talk to you and figure out, okay, where do you really want to go paddling? What kind of paddling do you really want to do as opposed to what, you know, you maybe saw or someone, you know, put in your head? And you don't get that anywhere else. You don't get that certainly in any big box. But you don't get that, of course, on the used market, whether that's, you know, Craigslist or Marketplace. That's all product, and that's fine. Sometimes you know exactly what you're looking for. But nothing compares to the human connection that you get. And I just enjoy myself walking through the store. Not only is
it is fun.
Gorgeous, and it's, you know, fun just to look at all the pretty things, it's an opportunity to connect to people there too.
Can we talk about something else? I'm getting very uncomfortable. talk about paddling, please.
Well, I tell you what, I just have put an end note on it. I've purchased 3 kayaks all at once.
Because why not?
Thank you.
Because why not? Yeah. And the support and the help and the chance to try them out. For 3 different kinds of people, really, and meeting the needs of each, you know, daughter, spouse, father, was critical for me.
Sure, yeah.
And it resulted in some a lot of pleasure down the line. Well, we are really... We're going to turn our attention more to canoeing and kayaking here with our guests.
Thank you.
Darren Bush and Tim Bauer, Timothy Bauer, member of MilesPaddle.com, among other things. Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions. I see we've got a nice question from EJ and Phillips coming up, and we'll deal with that in just a minute. But a reminder, I'm Larry Mueller, and you, my friend, is listening to WPR News. Thanks so much for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Darren Bush, owner and chief paddling evangelist for Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison, and Timothy Bauer, Tim, member of MilesPaddle.com, a website for all things paddling in the upper Midwest. He's written a guidebook, and he has another one coming out in about a year, I think, on covering the Driftless area. His first book covers canoeing and kayaking in South Central Wisconsin, 60 paddling adventures within 60 miles of Madison. You can join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. EJ in Phillips emailed us. Can you guys explain the advantages or disadvantages of kayaks with kegs versus rudders? And somebody might say, what are kegs?
I think he means kegs.
A keg would be tough for a kayak. Yeah, yeah, some canoes could probably handle it. It is Wisconsin, after all.
Yeah, maybe a pony, but I don't think so.
No. Why don't you take this one,
Darren? So a skeg is basically a fin that drops down out of the bottom of a kayak. So you can have a more maneuverable boat, and then if you want to go straighter, you drop this thing down out from the bottom of the hull, and it helps you go straight. The benefit of that is it's very simple. It's easier to service. A rudder allows you to use your foot pedals to control the direction of the boat slightly. It drops off the back of the boat and can pivot a little bit and help steer your boat. The downside is it's more complicated and things can break on it. You don't see them very often on smaller boats. Skegs, I think, are becoming more popular on boats under 16 feet, even over that. My Sea Kayak has a skeg on it, and it's 16 feet. But rudders are kind of not old school, but they really came out in the Pacific Northwest with people that were paddling giant boats because they had to carry their water. So when you have a 17 and a half to 18 foot, you know, high volume boat, having a rudder is really helpful to make it go where you want it to go.
Yeah. Tim, anything to add there?
I would just add that the skeg drops down maybe 5-6 inches or so, depending on, you know, make, model and all that. They are prone to getting little pebbles stuck in the slit that it hides in. So they could be a little persnickety in that regard. A rudder will drop more like a foot down into the water. Skegs are nice. They're helpful, especially on a windy day, if you don't want to do too much work and just track straight. But a rudder, you know, is more like having, you know, manual transmission versus automatic.
Dan in Neillsville, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling, Dan. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I got a 17-foot fiberglass canoe, and it's pretty heavy. And just wondering, what's the best way to transport that besides a truck?
Right.
You can put it in the back of a truck. There are things you can extend off of your receiver hitch that'll go out and create another platform that you can tie your boat to, so you can tie it in the bed and in the back. The other thing that we are seeing more and more of is people getting small trailers.
Right.
That's just as boats, well, especially like fishing kayaks, they're upwards of 80 to 100 pounds now. So rather than load the boat on top of the car, you load it on a small trailer, and that works great.
Now you're only lifting it 3 feet or so.
Or less, right.
Or less.
You just get one end on and slide it up. But sometimes a trailer is cost competitive with a roof rack, depending on what kind of roof rack you get. So it's become very popular.
Yeah.
Alternatively, you could just get a lighter canoe, of course, too.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
That is
that's not always in anyone's budget.
But if you're sitting there with your fiberglass canoe you don't want to get rid of.
Yeah. The trailer is a great option, though. My friend Scotty kind of modified one himself. He's a pretty handy guy, and that's one of the benefits of a trailer. I mean, you could buy one, say, at Rutabaga, ready to go, or you could buy a frame and then modify it, build it up as, you know, custom to the boats you have, the places you go to, et cetera.
As an owner of many boats and boat trailers, the wheels and taking care of them is kind of critical, and they're typically smaller wheels too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, keep them out of the UV. Use a UV inhibitor on the wheels. Sometimes they'll dry rot and crack, and that's why you see the RVs with the big covers on their wheels when they're sitting there.
Yeah, makes sense. Dan, thank you very much for calling. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. My question is for Darren, and it's a question I've had ever since I heard you first appear on Larry's show. Why Rutabaga? Where did you get the name? How did you land on that name?
It's interesting. I didn't get the name. It came with the business, and it was actually named for a Frank Zappa song. There was no reason to change it, so we just kept Rutabaga.
Hippies in the 1970s.
Yeah, it goes back. I mean, how far back is that?
76.
1976.
Yeah,
it started. And a Frank Zappa song.
Yep, it's call any vegetable, and then listen to the chorus, and you'll know why.
Okay. Jeannie from Inaqua emailed us. Sometimes she wonders when she hears of someone making new records like kayaking the entire Wisconsin River, for example. How do they navigate? Like all night in the dark? Would it be difficult to discern areas of islands and bays and so forth? Are there GPS systems for this?
Well, in a river, it's pretty easy. You just go where the current goes, right? You don't get lost. But it depends on the race or the trip, because some people just, they try and do it as fast as they can, and they'll start early in the morning and go till late at night, and they usually do it around summer solstice, right? So you get the most light. But there are races. There's one in Missouri that's 320 miles, and they paddle 24 hours, and they, in tandems usually, and they'll, like, one person will sleep while the other person paddles, like, sleep sitting up for an hour and then switch. I had a friend that did it, and he said after a day and a half he was hallucinating, which I get. You know, lack of sleep can do that. But yeah, and there's the Yukon race. There's all sorts of these long sort of endurance races where people paddle through the night.
She's wondering about GPS systems too. I mean, do you guys ever use a GPS when you're out there?
I don't know.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, if, on a small river, the only reason it's good to have it is if you don't know where the takeout is. And you come around the corner and go, oh, this is Bridge 12. My car is at Bridge 10, which has happened to me before. You get lost in the moment, and you're looking around. This is beautiful. It's like, wait, where's my car? So, I mean, it's okay to mark it in your phone as where your car is parked. There's nothing wrong with doing that. The only thing with GPSs is they fail. You know, batteries die, and
things happen. Or you might not have a signal.
Right.
Right.
I was thinking
a paper map is nothing beats.
I always have a paper map.
analog GPS, a compass and a map, right?
Right.
It's I've had a lot of fun over the years because I've spent a lot of time on, like, the Turtle Flambeau Flowage and the Chippewa Flowage, which are also cool places to paddle on. But in musky fishing, I've taken people out. You go out a ways, and there's islands everywhere, and then you get on the other side of a couple of islands, and I'll typically say, well, now how do we get back?
Yeah. Especially in the dark.
Say, yeah. And they'll say, I have no idea.
Well, I can tell you, last summer I got temporarily misplaced in the Boundary Waters. I got turned 90 degrees for some reason, and I'm like, wait, this isn't right, and I had to back up, and my wife's said, look at the other map, because I had a very small scale map and I was squinting at it. I got the big one out. I'm like, oh, that's where we are. And, you know, it was a half an hour past where I wanted to go. But I mean, it happens to everybody. Yeah. But if you're going to get lost, the Boundary Waters isn't a bad place to get lost.
I was going to say, that's part of the adventure. I mean, I understand that not everyone has the time or the comfort level of not knowing where they are, and suddenly not being able to get back to where they want to be at a certain time. But when you get lost, that's often when you find things that you didn't know you were looking for in the first place.
Yeah. I think I've told the story in the past, but I was fishing, doing a little guiding on the Turtle Flambeau, and kind of around an island came five canoes, and they saw me, and they started furiously paddling toward me, and I said to the person I was with, well, there's somebody who's lost. And I said, well, how'd you get turned around? And they said, well, the outfitter told us to go out to the island and then turn right.
Go out to the island?
Yeah. Which island?
You could see 10 islands.
One of 15, 20, yeah.
Oh, man. Steve called, couldn't stay with us. How many kayaks do you sell compared to canoes? Steve says it seems like kayaks are more popular than canoes these days, and wonders why that could be.
There's a lot of reasons. I mean, we probably at Rutabaga sell more canoes than most places do. Kayaks are pretty easy to sell, get into, and know how to make them go straight pretty quick, because you've got that, you know, bilateral stroke. Canoes are a little bit more nuanced, but around here, they're often a better tool. If you think about coming around the corner on the Sugar River, and all of a sudden there's a cottonwood across it that wasn't there the last time you were there, getting out of a kayak and climbing up onto the shore is tricky. It's not tricky with a canoe, but it's a lot easier to get out and get up and pull the boat over the log. So oftentimes that's a good way to go. The other thing that has made canoe sales go up is a thing called a pack boat. And that's a small canoe where you sit on the bottom of the boat in a kayak seat and use a double-bladed paddle. And that gets you essentially the benefits of a kayak that weighs less because you don't have a deck, but you get the same efficiency of having double-bladed paddle. And then there's a friend of mine up in the UP who makes covers, Red Leaf Designs, and you put a cover over it that just snaps on or Velcros on, and you get the water dripping off that. So it's basically a kayak with a very soft top to it. So pack boots have grown. And also, you can get a pack boat down to like 21 pounds. So
yeah, pack boats, inflatables in general, I think there's... Is there more popularity to inflatables these days?
Oh, so there's pack boats and there's packable boats?
Yeah, two different things. Yeah.
Sometimes. I mean, with people have e-bikes, there's a lot of folks that will throw their inflatable in the bag on the back and then bike down the lake or bike up the river and then paddle back down. And that's not a bad way to go. They're not efficient. Or as efficient as a hard shell boat, but if you've got storage problems or whatever, you can do well. They especially on a river, you know, you don't really need a lot of hydrodynamics on a river. You just let the river do the work.
Craig and Butternut, we just lost him. He had an inflatable kayak question.
Bye, Craig. Sorry
for you, but. What are the brands? I mean, I'm thinking about it for inflatables, for example. You've got, what, Sea Eagle? You've got...
Sea Eagle, Cocopelli, Advanced Designs.
Aquamarine.
Gumatex / Innova. And there's plenty of them. You have to be a little careful. Some of them are not great as far as paddling, and some of them are pretty inexpensive, like cheap inexpensive, where, you know, if you hit a rock... Or slice them, they're going to cut them open. But some of them, you can jump up and down on them. And
Craig, who we lost, was wondering how durable they are.
It depends. I mean, generally, the more you pay for something, the better it is, usually. That's kind of how it works in sporting goods. There's some really cool technology with inflatables. There's a thing called the drop stitch that you can make something that is... You can get up to 20 PSI, and it's like a board, so you get that efficiency. Most of them are very, very durable. The ones that aren't, you can kind of tell because it looks like the thing you float around in when you're a kid.
Well, I'll just say, I'll put in a plug here for Rutabaga because I think Darren would be too modest to. This is exactly why you want to go to that kind of shop. Because mm-hmm. the two of you just rattled off 6 or 7 different manufacturers. I don't know anything about inflatable kayaks myself. So I might look online, I might look for something used and not know the difference between is this good, is this bad, is this in between? Are there, you know, certain manufacturing qualities I should be looking for? I have no idea. But the people at the shop, they do. They know all these things and could, again, answer my question about what is my intention? Am I going to be using this for a lake, using this on a big river, a small creek, etc.? And you're not going to get that, you know, just anywhere online. You're not going to get it at a big box store.
Talking canoeing, kayaking with our two guests, Darren Bush and Tim Bauer. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments as we move along. We can talk about where to go. We can talk about the equipment itself as we've just been doing. And join in. The number's 800-642-1234. Or you can email to talk@wpr.org. John in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi. I've always dreamed of taking an inflatable or of some kind of canoe with me to China and canoeing down some out-of-the-way river. Have either of you done something like that or some other country, maybe down the Mekong River in Laos or something?
Hmm. I have friends that have. I've paddled in China, but it was in a club boat. And in China, no one has anywhere to store anything. So there's kayaking clubs where they have like 100 boats. And some friends of mine go over there and actually teach kayaking. But it's tricky. We're kind of used to the Northwest Ordinance and kind of going wherever you want. And, you know, it's not like that. In most places, we were in Istanbul and wanted to go for a paddle, and the guy just said, no. If you put a boat in the water, the police will be there within 5 minutes with machine guns asking you why you're there. And I don't know why that is, but most places, kayaks and canoes are so unfamiliar to them that they don't know why. It's like, why would you want to do this? There are guided trips where people can take you to places like Vietnam and Cambodia and anywhere in Southeast Asia that are wonderful, but those people have a network and they've already cleared it with the local authorities and all that. So just taken off by yourself, you may end up having to explain to you.
A lot of things you don't want to explain.
So why are you here?
With your passport.
Yeah, yeah. Why are you here, you dope? This is not a safe place to be or whatever. There's places to go, and there are people that have been there before. And like, you know, there's a river in Chile that's really cool, the Furlifu, and there's people that guide there. So my advice is to find a guide for your first trip.
Where would you go? Where would you go to look for that? I suppose just go online and type in.
If you Google kayaking, you know, anywhere, you're going to get an outfitter probably.
Or like the ecotourism, you know, yeah. that's a big business for lots of places that can do that and want to support that industry.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a friend that runs a place in Venice, so if you want to go paddle around and see the Doge's Palace from the water, you can. It's pretty cool.
Scott, all right. It does sound kind of, he brought it up, it does sound kind of fun and interesting for sure. Scott in Eagle River, we'll go to you now. Hi, Scott.
Hi, great show, you guys. I certainly recognize the uniqueness of canoes in terms of their specific uses, but I was wondering if you could maybe address an all-around best value canoe for both river and lake. Both weight and size, so kind of a jack of all trades, maybe, and best value.
Okay, well,
Swiss
I'll ask
Army
you both.
Knife of canoes.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Is it like the most common?
Oh, well, and it's like I want a Porsche, but I want to be able to haul a bale of hay.
Right.
So, and you know, everything is a compromise, but there are boats that can. They're kind of in the middle of the road as far as performance, middle of the road as far as durability, middle of the road as far as weight. You know, value, I'm glad you said value and not price, because what it gets down to is the cost per paddle. So if you buy a boat off Craigslist for $400 and put it in your backyard and paddle it once, that's a $400 per paddle boat. That's a really expensive boat. So if you pick the thing that's best for you, you're going to use it a lot more. So, I mean, there's some boats in the high teens, low twos, like a skiff makes some really, really nice canoes that, you know, their weight's in the 50s, so doable, and they paddle well, and then they have different shapes if you want one for moving water. So there's like a Kickapoo boat. There's Wisconsin River boats, so more tracking. So you can kind of narrow it down to exactly what you want to do. But that material, it's called T-Formex, and it's very durable. You know, you've got a couple of Royal X / T-Formex boats, so they're good for shallow water. So yeah, tell them to call me. I'll figure it out.
What about from your perspective, Tim?
So it is such a difficult question because I experience this on my own regularly. You want there to be that silver bullet, easy answer, that go-to that can do everything, whether it's our vehicles, our bicycles, or in this case, you know, canoe or kayak. I try to hedge a lot of what I do. So I have a gravel bike because it can do kind of everything.
Same.
It's not a road bike, but I don't do rides past, you know, 25 or 30 miles too often, or really ever, unless I lost a bet. my car is a Subaru, surprise, surprise, you know, because it's not a truck, it's not four-wheel drive, but it can get into a couple unpaved areas. So boats are like that too. So much of it has to do with, you know, what is your price point? What is your comfort with the weight? Do you want something that's going to be, I mean, the Scott called in about rivers and lakes. And a lot of boats, I think, can do both, but there are boats that are definitely better for, you know, a river dynamic versus, you know, quiet water lake dynamic. Call Darren. but I think there's also probably, off the top of my head, I can't think of it, and Darren, let fill in the blank. But there are online guides that, you know, basically will tell you, here are the range of the weights, the lengths of the boats, what material it's made out of, and how they handle for these, you know, whether it's just quiet water, some level of white water, or if you're just going to be doing quiet water or, you know, flat water and lakes.
Yeah, just be careful on Reddit or any online thing, because what happens is a guy says, I love this boat. This is a great boat. Yeah. It's like, well, it's like asking, is your kid pretty? Right? Because if it's your boat, you're going to think it's the best. So just get a lot of information from a lot of people.
Does Canoe and Kayak magazine still have a annual gear guide?
Yeah, they have an annual buyer's guide.
Right, right. That's a good place to start, I'd say.
Phone book. It's got every boat that's built.
It's a cure for insomnia, too.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Well, there you go, Scott. Thank you very much for calling. Jane wrote us an email, and we'll get that in just a minute. Reminder, you can call in, too, or send us an email. The number 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller with Darren Bush and Tim Bauer. You're listening to WPR News. Talking canoeing and kayaking today with Darren Bush and Tim Bauer. Great to have you listening in. Questions, again, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Jane sent us an email. Jane says she's fortunate enough to live on the beautiful Red River in Shawano County, and it's her favorite paddle. She's been known to paddle upstream to avoid running a vehicle at the ending point. It's a great workout as well. She says, paddle on, but what about the Red River in Shawano County?
Oh, boy. I love the Red. It's often has a shorthand for whitewater. It gets up to Class 3. There's a drop there called Monastery Falls, which is in plain sight of a monastery ruins last I know is still there. So there's a short run for the Red that off the top of my head, I think is only like 4.5 or 6 miles. We have that posted on milespaddle.com. It's found elsewhere too. It's kind of a classic run. Water levels tend to be pretty good, even though it is a steep gradient stream. It is definitely, the section I'm talking about is definitely not for beginners. I mean, you could portage around the big stuff, and you definitely should at least scout it, and if you're not feeling comfortable, you should definitely portage it. But even the quote-unquote littler stuff in between, it could be squirrely, you could flip over pretty easily if you don't know what you're doing. It sounds like Jane definitely knows what she's doing. It's a great stream. I'm really only familiar with it, the classic stretch, though, that coincides with a few Class 2, 3 rapids. There's definitely stuff above stream, and then eventually it goes into the Wolf River short distance after the classic trip. But I think there are some dams that impede its flow upstream of the conventional trip, but it is a great stream.
Kathy in Middleton has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My question is, I own two kayaks that when my adult kids were home, we would just haul them on top of my SUV and go. But now all the kids are gone, and I'm on my own, and I certainly cannot haul a kayak on my own on top of my SUV. Is there an alternative of a decent kayak that maybe would fit inside an SUV or a different way to haul it? I know I could rent a spot by water in the summer, but that gets really pricey.
What's your what SUV do you have, by the way? Is it a, you know?
It's not huge. It's a RAV4.
No problem. So there are several different methods to get the boat up on your car we call them load assists generically. There's ones that will, so you can load your boat low and then it gets an assist to put it up on top with some hydraulic pistons and things like that. There's some things that you can use to slide it up the back. There's small trailers. I wouldn't recommend a boat you can fit inside your boat in your car because usually they stick out and actually get exhaust gas coming in, so that's not good. A small inflatable is not a bad idea. If you're not looking at something that moves through the water, great. It's more of a go out, paddle a little bit, and sit and watch the sunset. But there are, the load assist is probably the best way to go. You've got, if they're heavier boats, then switching to a lighter boat might be a good idea. That happens a lot at the shop.
Yeah. Kathy, does that help?
Yes, very helpful. I wondered about inflatables and if I would still, if those were sturdy enough, but maybe I'll look into those as well.
Yeah, some of them are, but I would look at, call me. I'll send you an email or send me an email. I'll send you some links to some different brands and, some we have, some we don't, but I'll give you some things that might help you.
All right. Kathy, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And if she just types in Rutabaga Paddle Sports, she's going to get your contact.
Probably. Sending an email to customer service at Rutabaga is going to get you a person right away.
Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go, Kathy. Thank you very much. Boris in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Boris.
Yeah, I just listened in and got the tail end of the discussion about Futu Alefu, and I just want to point out, so the outfit that is really great is Earth River Expedition. They go to other places in South America as well, including also a couple rivers in Canada, one of which is the Magpie, which they have, this outfit has very good pricing, in my opinion. They are perfectly safe. My son Oscar, he used to paddle with some of their guides. Anyway, that's a place to start looking.
And it, repeat it again, because people say, wait a minute, what was that?
It's Earth River Expeditions.
Earth River Expeditions.
Yeah. There's also some great documentaries on the Futu. There was a dam that was going to shut down the whole whitewater section. And there's a group of indigenous people, including a bunch of women, who protested that. And there's a lot of good stories. But also, the Northern Canadian rivers are, there's some really cool trips.
I can imagine. Yeah. Boris, thanks a lot for adding that. I really appreciate the comment. Joe in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I need another retirement boat, and what I need specifically is a something to run up to class 2 rapids, and in my dotage, I'm not as nimble or careful as I used to be, so something that I can run into rocks and not destroy the boat, by the way, but is also light enough for an old guy.
A canoe or a kayak?
Canoe or kayak, Joe?
A canoe.
Okay. The one I just took off my car would be perfect. I was leaving the house. Stephanie said, do you have a car, a boat on your car? I'm like, parking ramps. Yeah, better take it off now. Yeah, there's some materials out there that are super, super durable. I just, like I said, I just ran the Grant. And there's some, rocky stretches, and you just bang into it, and it doesn't matter. So. It's called IXP. That's the stuff that comes from North Star Canoe. There's Expedition Kevlar that comes from Swift. There's Tough Weave that comes from Winona, mm-hmm. Tough Stuff from Novacraft. So every composite canoe company has their version of the stuff that you can't kill. And I've run class 3 rapids on the San Juan River in Utah in an IXP boat, and no problem at all.
So, and what's the boat you had in your car that you had to take off?
I had a North Star Phoenix. Depending on how much you weigh, there's a smaller boat that's almost identical called the Firebird. Yeah. It's 13.5 feet. But there's plenty of boats with some durability. There's some others as well.
Joe, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. What do you recommend for PFDs? Ellie wants to know from Madison. What factors do you consider? And do you keep at Rutabaga, do you keep a variety of sizes to try on? Ellie's old life jacket needs an update.
Well, the best PFD is the one you'll wear.
Yeah.
And the best one you'll wear is the one that's comfortable. So there's been a lot of things that have happened in the PFD world in the past even 5 years with fit. We're basically tubes, right? And when they take two pieces of flat foam and try and wrap them around you, you're going to fight it. But they're now cutting the foam and using panels so that it actually wraps around your body. And it's so comfortable. You don't have to tighten it as much because you don't have to flatten that foam. So, yeah, and we've got a couple hundred life jackets in stock probably.
Yeah. And that, it brings to mind, you better be wearing one.
You know what?
This time of year any time of the year.
I was just paddling on the Grant. The Grant might be 2 feet or 3 feet at its deepest. I was wearing a life jacket. It's not worth it. I could probably ride to the store, 2 miles away on my bike without a bike helmet. But all it takes is one moment. Right. So there's no reason now with the comfort of life jackets to not wear them. I understand 25, 30 years ago when they were really uncomfortable, but not anymore.
This time of year, especially, I'm looking for another layer of warmth when I'm going to be paddling. And so it's a no-brainer for me this time of year.
And if you're like me, who has a very good fishing buddy for 30 years who fell out of his boat and drowned about this time of the year, who was even had his own swimming pool at home, but who didn't have his life jacket on.
I can swim and surf. I can swim in big waves. I can get pounded, and I'm fine. But if I fall out of my boat and hit my head on a rock, maybe I'm not fine anymore.
Yeah.
Chris in Sturgeon Bay would like to put a plug in for sea kayaks in the 15, 16, 17-foot range. Plenty of choices that weigh less than 50 pounds. His main boat is 16 feet 9 inches and weighs 38 pounds.
Oof.
Island crossings to explore and wrecks in Lake Michigan and Superior are awesome. Night paddle in Kena is fun. I wouldn't recommend paddling the Great Lakes too far out this time of the year, though. Own personal.
It depends on the weather. I've paddled on Lake Superior in a canoe with a cover on a day that it's pretty flat. But I'm more, I think I'm 30 or 40 yards from shore at the max. So,
right.
And that's fine.
Well, courtesy of Wisconsin Public Radio, I learned earlier this week that the Great Lakes are about 5 degrees warmer than their average.
So 50 instead of 45. It's still cold.
Still cold. But Lake Michigan is, I think that's still at like 60 right now.
Yeah, it's that's true.
A windy day like today and what we've had lately, that's going to be either the cat's pajamas for some sea kayakers, or just way too treacherous for people trying to get into it. But as long as you have some skills and you've got the right clothing and you stick pretty close to shore, Door County is rife with gorgeous opportunities.
And don't go alone.
Yeah, don't
just
go alone.
Don't
go alone.
No, it's not worth it.
And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you, Darren. Thank you, Tim, very much for being with us. I hope you'll come back and do it again.
Anytime. It's a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you both. Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison. Timothy Bauer, a member of the MilesPaddle.com. It's a website for all things paddling in the upper Midwest. Big thanks to them. And full disclosure, Rutabaga Paddle Sports is one of WPR's many business sponsors, which we definitely appreciate. Big thanks to our team, Clara Niper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.